This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
My message is, let people not take the law into their own hands.
That's Gambian Interior Minister Ibrima Mbalo discussing deadly clashes over a sand mining operation in the Gambia. Details coming up.
Also, 8 Kenyan security personnel were killed in an attack by Al-Shabaab fighters yesterday. And Nigeria and Morocco sign an agreement for the construction of a pipeline more than 5,000 kilometers long.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, 8 Kenyan security personnel were killed in an attack by Al-Shabaab fighters yesterday in northeastern Wajir County. The area has been a frequent site of attacks by militants crossing the border from Somalia. Ryle Lambor reports from Nairobi.
The incident is said to have occurred around 2:30 p.m. on Sunday. The security personnel were on patrol when they were attacked near the town of Bojigaras. Authorities said the car the security officers were traveling in ran over an improvised explosive device. After the explosion, Al-Shabaab fighters opened fire. Isa Ahmed Abdi is a member of the Wajir County Assembly.
They started shooting at them and then they killed all of them, only to leave one who was still alive, but we are bringing him to Wajir Referral Hospital. He succumbed to the injuries on his way.
Authorities say after the attack, the militants fled towards the Somalia border. Ahmed said locals had expressed their concern about an impending attack and the information was passed along to the security forces to no avail.
It could have been prevented because the public have actually given a first-hand information that these elements were there, and these elements themselves also said that they are going to do an action that the people will regret.
Northeastern Kenya has been the site of some of Al-Shabaab's most deadly attacks. In December 2014, the group killed 38 non-Muslims at a quarry in Mandera. In April 2015, gunmen stormed the Garissa University College, killing 148 people and injuring more than 100. This is the second Al-Shabaab attack in the county this year. In February, militants killed 3 people at Kasa Primary School. Al-Shabaab has targeted Kenya in retaliation for the country's involvement in AMISOM, the African Union force in Somalia that backs the federal government. Ryle Lambor for VOA News, Nairobi.
In the Gambia, 2 people have been confirmed dead and many others critically injured after a sand mining dispute turned violent. VOA's Pandera Mbai reports.
The long-standing sand mining dispute in Faraba Banta village has erupted in deadly clashes in southern Gambia, about 51 kilometers from the capital, Banjul. Ibrahim Mbalo is Gambia's interior minister.
Our people are in Faraba. Initially, it was a standby unit of very few people, and the whole village overcame the people, and they have to draw back and to prepare a contingency plan. As I am talking to you now, my men are on the ground trying to maintain the peace.
Duloke Engineering and Construction Company is at the center of the sand mining dispute. The company has been accused of environmental exploitation. But Interior Minister Mbalo tells VOA that Duloke was issued license by the government to engage in sand mining in Faraba. Mbalo calls on villagers to be law-abiding.
My message is, let people not take the law into their own hands. Let them have dialogue with the government. If they have grievances, there is court, there is rule of law. It is very much important that when you have your grievances, send it through the right channel.
Dr. Lamin Conte is a native of Faraba, who also is a professor of accounting based in the United States.
This mining to us is an environmental disaster for us. And also, if you look at the neighboring village, maternal home, we had the same incident there with the salt incident where all the rice fields were contaminated by salt. And I am very, very sorry to hear, you know, that Mr. Kujabi and Mr. Barr lost their lives and several other people got injured.
Vehicles at the mining site were vandalized during the early morning fracas. Some members of the police intervention unit also sustained injuries. Faraba remains tense and chaotic.
Who should be blamed for the death? Number one, I blame the chief. I blame the alcalde. I blame the commissioner or the governor of West Coast region. I blame President Barrow. I blame the Inspector General of Police. I also blame even my relatives who are part of this illegal sand mining. I blame all of them.
The Julake Engineering and Construction Company is owned by Anshuman Marena. The villagers of Faraba have called for the relocation of the mining site. For VOA Africa, this is Panderimbay reporting.
Zimbabweans go to the polls at the end of July to elect new local and national officials. Last week, hundreds of applicants went to court to file their papers and to register as candidates. Gender equality groups like the Zimbabwe Women Parliamentarians Caucus have been working to encourage women to run for office. It is working to have women make up half of all candidates. VOA correspondent Addie Gondo was at the nomination court in Bulawayo to assess the current situation.
Unlike their male counterparts, female political candidates face particular barriers which hinder them from running for elected office. They include sex stereotyping, political socialization, and the work-life and family balance. In previous elections, political violence was a major deterrent. This election is different. Last November, the military encouraged President Robert Mugabe to step down in favor of current President Emmerson Mnangagwa. In this year's election, the long-ruling ZANU-PF could be threatened by an opposition alliance that includes the Movement for Democratic Change, the MDC. More people seem interested in politics. On Thursday, men and women, black and white, were filing their papers as candidates. Nicola Jane Watson, candidate MP for Blawayo Central for the MDC ally, explained their reason for joining the fray, the breakdown in social services.
What we all have to fight for is devolution. It is the solution to a lot of the economic ills in Zimbabwe, and we have to fight for the revival of the economy. It will create a dynamic ability for provinces to develop without the interference of central government, set their own agenda, use their own resources, their own human capital. And I'm particularly concerned with the peri-urban area. They have no running water, they have no electricity.
The concern of women candidates over declining living standards is palpable. For example, a reported 27% of children are not going to school, and a considerable number lack basics such as birth certificates. In addition, cash shortages are now a part and parcel of life in Zimbabwe. In Zimbabwe, female politicians face bias from male colleagues, and political parties lack any rules or guidelines to ensure gender equality. But Keresia Gwaira Rwafa feels strongly about her role as a potential leader. She's the candidate MP for Blawayo East for the Zimbabwe Partnership for Prosperity Party, ZIP.
I'm going to represent my community as a woman. That's why I managed to stand up and stand for all women, because I've seen women were always pushed out from politics. But now I'm standing up for all women, the whole nation.
Progress in increasing the participation of women in politics at all levels of government remains low. In comparison, countries such as Rwanda are leading the way with over 61% female representation in parliament. The coming elections will show if Zimbabwe can turn the corner and make politics and gender equality more accessible to women. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
14 past the hour, you were listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Nigeria and Morocco have signed an agreement for the construction of a gas pipeline, more than 5,000 kilometers long. Officials say the construction will meet the needs of the two countries and Europe for 25 years. Both parties have agreed to jointly fund a feasibility study on the project. Chika Onugbu is the former National Industrial Relations Officer of the Petroleum and Natural Gas Senior Staff Association of Nigeria. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye about the benefits of the project to Nigeria.
Both Nigeria and Morocco will profit from the project. So that until we know the details of the contract, for instance, who is going to be paying for the pipelines, which people are going to be working on it, in terms of staff, employees, contractors, because those are important aspects. But for Nigeria, the key thing there is about it will help in providing a market for Nigerian gas, of course, reduce gas flaring by utilizing some of those gases for this project. But, and then of course, earn some money from it. But beyond that, it is actually not the direction the country should be going. We should be thinking about how to expand our domestic gas infrastructure such that we utilize most of those gases at home. This is because, let us not do the same thing we are doing in oil for gas, where we are a net exporter. We export the gas without even using, the oil. And then when we need the refined products, we import. For the gas, we have serious need for gas here in terms of power projects. 85% of our national grid is actually gas-powered line. So you expect that we should be using our gas to provide power for our industries and grow our economy. Gas is the major raw materials for petrochemicals and for the manufacture of fertilizer.
Oil operations are hampered by pirates and militants in the Niger Delta. How can Nigeria and Morocco make this pipeline safe?
We've not seen the engineering design for the pipeline. I think that perhaps they may want to pass the gas through the sea and then move towards that area, in which case the construction cost may be high, but the cost of vandalism may be low. But again, the solution to all this Niger Delta crisis is basically trying to get them, the people, to be part of what is happening in their environment, which of course is what the petroleum host and impacted communities bill is seeking to achieve. We hope that the final bill will be able to address those host community concerns, because I think that the host communities are also beginning to recognize the fact that the Niger Delta is losing a lot of business opportunities.
Do you think anybody can oppose this project?
People need to see the environmental impact assessment of the project. It's standard requirement. Every project has environmental impact assessment. So people need to see it. If anybody feels that, going by the result of the environmental impact assessment, that the project is not good for him, such a person will not keep quiet. He will normally rise up and raise concerns about it. But in terms of opposing on political grounds, I can't dictate what is in political agenda of anybody or social or economic agenda of anybody. The fact remains that, on the whole, it is a good project, but it is not the best that we can do with our gas.
That was Chika Onogbu, former National Industrial Relations Officer of the Petroleum and Natural Gas Senior Staff Association of Nigeria. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt.
Tunisia will get its World Cup campaign started today with a tough match against England. It's unlikely that England will be overconfident because the team is trying to bounce back from weak performances at Euro 2016 in Iceland and the last World Cup in Brazil 4 years ago. Tunisia had a decent warm-up to the World Cup with 2 wins, 2 draws, and a loss to Spain in its last 5 international friendly matches. In other plays today, Sweden scored a 1-0 victory over South Korea, and Belgium got all of its goals in the second half to defeat Panama 3-0.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization estimates that 1.3 billion tons of food go to waste globally every year. This represents about a third of the food produced for human consumption around the world. Analysts say post-harvest loss reduces the income of smallhold farmers by 15%. Researchers from the University of Zurich and their partners are carrying out a project in Tanzania to cut those losses for small-scale farmers. From the Tanzanian town of Kondoa, Ruben Chama reports.
Maize farmers prepare as the harvest season approaches at Mnenia village in Tanzania's Kondoa district. The weather has been good and most farmers here expect bumper yields. Amina Hussein, a mother of 4, is testing her new way to store her harvest. She says, in the past we used to store our produce in normal bags We would buy them 3 times a year because we faced the risk of losing harvests to pest infestation. But since the introduction of this new technology, using the Ametic storage bags, we are not incurring huge costs anymore to buy chemicals to preserve the maize. Amina, who is the chairperson of a local farmers association, says she used to spend precious cash on pesticides to preserve her maize. The new bags cut that cost. About 85% of Tanzania's population lives in rural areas and relies on agriculture for a living. Small older farmers constitute the majority of the population. The University of Zurich is spearheading a research project to cut grain losses and assess how that affects market prices and family food security. According to Dr. Matthias Hus, the head of the research project, more than 1,000 small-scale farmers in 2 regions in central Tanzania are involved in the project, which in part uses airtight and watertight storage bags instead of normal plastics or cloth bags. The study is connected to a larger project that Swiss development agency Elvetas runs to help increase farm income. Rakesh Monankami, a project manager at Elvetas, says his organization has been at the forefront in promoting secure grain storage.
Post-harvest loss, it's a big issue, not only in Tanzania, in all of sub-Saharan Africa. The World Bank says, you know, it's about $4 billion is lost annually. And if we can reduce post-harvest loss, there won't be any problem with the food security.
Michael Branda is one of the lead researchers from the University of Zurich. He says initial findings show that improved on-farm storage cut the number of food insecure households by 33% in the lean season. The lean season is the time a few months after harvest when own stocks are used up and the new harvest not yet brought in.
The study is to inform decisions that are taken, for example, at policy level, but also by development actors and the private sector. We are now 1 year into the study, and the most astonishing finding so far is that we see that the number of people that go hungry is reduced by 1/3, and that's especially astonishing because the intervention has worked very fast.
For farmers like Amina Hussein, even a modest cut in grain losses can mean more food for their children and more cash for the family. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Kondoa, Central Tanzania.
Uganda's Ministry of Gender and Youth Affairs says it's working with the police and other security organs to take children off the streets and to government centers. Minister Florence Nakawala Kayingi says there are criminal elements who traffic children from rural areas to Kampala to use them to beg on the streets. Reporter Mugumi Davis Wakaringi reports from Kampala, Uganda.
It's raining here, and about 30 children attend a basic science lesson at Safe Street Children Homes in the Kampala suburb of Kamocha. More than 50 children, mainly former street children, live here. Other children grace the downpour as they play soccer, soaking in sweat and raindrops. 16-year-old Dennis Rochoro is one of them. Rochoro was trafficked from the Karamoja region in the eastern Uganda in 2012 when he was just 10 years old. He says life on the street is very challenging. Rochoro did not have access to food and used to sleep on people's verandas, who would usually be abused by owners and guards.
At around 10, they beat you. You try to go to some veranda and you sleep there. At around 5 or 4 in the morning hours, again they come, they beat you. Like that, and the life was not really good. I could gun time when it is lunchtime. When I get someone who has finished eating, then when he has just left some leftovers, then I just beg, they give me.
Rochoro was rescued from the streets in February from Katwe slums and is now undergoing psychosocial counseling as well as education. According to the Minister of Gender and Youth Affairs, there are more than 1,000 street children in Kampala alone. including those as young as 6 months old. Minister Nachiwala Chiyinji says many trafficked children are used in criminal activities.
We have established that the emerging and leading cause currently is that being on the streets is because of some unscrupulous individuals who have been encouraging children, especially from Karamoja, to come to Kampala based on promises for better life and only to engage them in street begging as a business.
Nachiwala Chiyinji says there are also some individuals who operate illegal children homes. She says the government will close such homes and investigate the culprits. For example, she says only 70 children homes are cross-registered in her ministry, while some more than 560 are not. She says these children suffer physical, psychological, and emotional torture. They are exposed to harsh environmental conditions, hunger, and abused and discriminated against. Irene Malunga Banoba is the program's director of Save Street Children Uganda, which helps to provide support to former street children in Uganda. She says the most important way to deal with this problem is to fix the reasons why these children come to the streets in the first case.
They need to empower the families where these children came from, such that these children are able to access basic needs where they in the places where they live. Health, education, good living conditions. They can access food. We need to talk to community leaders at the grassroots, LOCs. Everyone should get involved.
Now that the young Lochoro is back at school, he dreams of becoming a mechanic. And Malunga believes helping children like him realize their dream is the best way to build a nation. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll look into the controversial topic of term limits for African leaders. Many heads of state disdain the restriction in order to maintain a grip on power. Term Limits versus Leaders for Life on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.